You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Friends, it is so good to be with you again this week. Chris is out. However, second show this week, we are so blessed to have Father Tim Grumbach with us live in studio. He is the associate pastor at St. Augustine Parish in Los Angeles. And, you know, there are so many fun things. We were talking about kind of introverts uniting here and how sometimes when we are interested in different things, it brings out awesome conversation topics from the fact that you surf, you play the banjo, among other instruments, and I've recently discovered you have a pair of chopsticks in your pocket.
Yeah, I've got a pair of chopsticks pretty much everywhere I go. And they're my ordination chopsticks, too. I showed you they have my name, Father Tim Grumbach, on there, and my ordination date. So just in case I ever forget, I don't have somebody to remind me of my ordination or my anniversary. And so my chopsticks are there for me.
Right, when you're eating. And I loved when we were talking before the show about how, for you, you know, there's so much food when you're in seminary. Yeah. And you were talking about basically having temperance and how eating with the chopsticks slows you down when people are so generous and giving you food, and there's this responsibility to eat, but at the same time, you know, be healthy.
That's right, and I'm very bad at discipline for myself and an internal level that I need something to physically constrain me, and so the chopsticks were how I slowed myself down for a long time, but I've gotten pretty darn good at them, so now it's just a quirk.
Now you're a pro eating with chopsticks. Yeah, right. It is amazing. Well, coming up on the show, we have a really interesting show for you. You know, some of you are probably surprised that we have not discussed the Supreme Court nominee, the potential for overturning Roe versus Wade. We were gone during the 4th of July, and so we didn't have a new show, but a pre-recorded show talking about healthy habits and lifestyle. So you guys, I'm sure, caught those episodes. But right now, we also want to start by talking about Washington. You know, our very first president, President George Washington, and what we can learn about him and bring it into part of a civil discourse over the Supreme Court, among many other conversations taking place both online and offline today. And coming up on the show later as well, we'll talk about how some people are hopping off of the social media bandwagon. So much to come. But let's start, Father Tim. I want to talk about this piece that came out right around the 4th of July. And it was that George Washington, President George Washington's basic rules for civility were actually based on 110 rules written by the Jesuits.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful that someone with that kind of history in our country found civility to be important? Civility is something that we're really struggling with right now, just with the everybody has a voice, everybody has a pulpit, and yet you know, we're not exactly pushing for the virtue of civility and the virtue of you know, being able to have a civil conversation or just to treat each other with civility. So it's good to see that that was at least at one point a pretty important part of our nation's history.
You know, I look at this, so basically when he was going through education, President Washington had to write down these 110 rules for civility and conversation. And because of that, he was kind of able to memorize and have them become a way of living. And these rules were actually founded based in about 1595 by the Jesuits. And it was actually specifically for forming, shaping young men on the exterior, hoping that that would kind of translate to the interior reality.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the most important things about shaping the heart is, you know, how are we acting it out and how are we growing from that? And but this also shows the impact that and the influence that the Catholic Church, even at such a subtle level, had on the shaping of our nation and the way that we treat one another as Americans. And it's really fun to see that it was just kind of something growing out of the French Jesuits for their young boys who, you know, maybe weren't necessarily going to become Jesuits, but they just wanted to wanted them to become well-rounded men, and mm-hmm. that, you know, their religion could have that kind of impact on them.
You know, all the way down to how do we have a conversation and the proper amount of distance between two people and not, you know, spitting on people, you know, kind of simple, silly things, but also being thoughtful. You know, if you're boring someone or you're overly conversing on a certain topic and aren't pulling people along with you.
Yeah. That's right. And it's just running through this list. There's a few that are just delightful that I am certainly not the most civil sort of man, according to the George Washington's list, the Jesuits list. I'm just right at the top of the list. I'm looking at number 4. In the presence of others, sing not to yourself with a humming voice or drum with your fingers or feet. I survived high school playing the air drum double bass with my feet. I don't know if I would have survived classes without pretending that I was like drumming for Metallica or something like that.
So. And you know what's funny is some of these I had to kind of take a pause, like, well, do I agree with that? And most of them, even the ones that you kind of go, oh, well, is that necessary? You know, there's nothing wrong with humming and so forth, right. But if you're in the middle of a conversation with people or people are trying to focus converse and you're rudely ignoring them, tuning them out, that's when things become problematic. And that's why it's civility within conversation in particular.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so it's not just a matter of you need to follow these rules for the sake of them being rules, but how are these rules affecting the way that we have relationships with others? When, you know, certainly sitting in my high school class, my teacher probably wouldn't have appreciated me, you know, daydreaming quite like that all the time. But more importantly, when I am face to face with somebody and having a conversation with them and I am not there, you know, that's a problem.
Well, and it talks about things like, okay, keep both feet on the ground. Don't cross your legs. Don't cross your feet. Don't twist in your chair. Well, there are multiple reasons where you could even think about this, from the way of body language and paying attention to someone. It actually helps you to focus to have both feet grounded on the ground. You know, they're very simple things that they're recommending.
That's right. Things that we might not consider the most civil aspects of our society today. But, as we were talking about some time ago, was the idea that looking back at the past grounds us in where we've come from. Mm-hmm. And so understanding where we've come from with these just simple ways of living. Perhaps we could look at this list of things. There's, what is it, 110, I think? 110. Mm-hmm. You know, that gave George Washington plenty of practice for his handwriting, but also in growing in civility. You know, there are little things here that maybe we could take one or two of these each week and practice that, even if it makes us a little bit uncomfortable, just to see the way that it would shape the way that we're relating to the people who are right in front of us. You know, what would it be like if I am having a conversation with somebody maybe I don't want to have a conversation with, and I start drumming the table or tapping my feet? What if I really actively tried not to do that and focused more so on what they were saying, even less on like how to respond to them, but more about just listening? You know, these things may seem silly or trivial to our society today, but one or two of these, to practice them during a week, that could turn around the way that we relate to people face to face.
Especially at a time when we are so polarized on opposite sides right now, having to do with politics, sexual realities of what we do and don't believe and what truly is, right? It's a time where I think it would help. I love that recommendation. For those who are just tuning in, that is Father Tim Grumbach. I'm Tim Ray Millington, and you are listening to Trending. And we'll be sure to tweet out those links to this public civility. You can follow Father Tim at Father Tim Grumbach on social media. And it's a great opportunity to just check out what he is sharing. He's huge on social media. You share quite a bit. I was just reading yesterday about Our Lady of Mount Carmel in part of your vocation story and praying and her interceding for you.
Yeah, that's right. Was being in the midst of a different culture where, yes, the civility is very different. It's a different expression. I was down in Mexico for 8 weeks studying Spanish. And while I was there, I was facing a lot of loneliness. And so probably could have used a list like this to be able to, you know, test myself, to walk into somewhere I was very uncomfortable and see, okay, how am I responding to the people who are, you know, I'm interacting with? And during that time of loneliness, I found myself in a church dedicated to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And, you know, one day I walked in there and she was missing. You know, she was up behind the altar all the time. And then she was all of a sudden down. They had her statue down to the left of the altar and her mantle splayed out so you could go under the mantle and there was a kneeler there and to pray there. And it was just this very comforting moment in the midst of a culture I was not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it gave me some grounding in a place that I was unfamiliar with. And perhaps we find ourselves even in our very own culture without that kind of grounding, mm-hmm. feeling a little bit like strangers, even in the midst of a large crowds or something like that.
Well, and in periods of time, it makes me think about this list from President George Washington on civility, and how if you maybe are someone who struggles with loneliness, or all of us do at some point, or maybe you're a little more shy, you're in an area, a different country, a different community, you don't know people, how following just a basic forms of conversation, you know, I think I notice some people who are more shy, they say, oh, well, so-and-so didn't want to talk to me, or you shut down a conversation. And the reality is that our body language can indicate that the other person is shutting you down. So you may be one who's like, man, they didn't want to talk to me, but maybe you kind of kept your back to them. Maybe you didn't look them in the eye. Maybe your body language communicated that you weren't interested in talking. And just because you're shy, we justify that, right? But in reality, if we had a better stance, a better engagement and social rules, it would allow for that conversation to move forward.
Yeah, and social media, as great as it is, takes away some of that opportunity for the body language, for looking in the eyes, for allowing for that civility of discourse and that civility of just encountering the other person. And then we might bring that experience of social media and how we relate, real relationships that those are. Those aren't fake relationships, but the temptation is really there to lose the civility, to lose the ability to let the other people respond and interact in very human ways. And then we bring that into our real relationships. Oh, there I go. Our face-to-face relationships. And those can become just as detached and uncivil in real life as they are in social media.
Absolutely. For those just tuning in, this is Tim Ray Millington. That's Father Tim Grumbach filling in for Chris. Later on in the third segment, we're going to be talking about Star Wars star Kelly Marie Tran, who left social media, and a little bit about the Supreme Court.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at CMuellerTweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
This is Timmery Millington here. It's so good to be with all of you again. Chris is out this week. However, I have in studio Father Tim Grumbach with me. You can look more about what he's up to on our show notes for the show. And also, you know, for those who are listening in their cars, you can find the episodes of this show. We did a great show earlier in the week together with Father Tim at radiotrending.com, our new website. Before the show, we were talking about our president, our very first president, George Washington, and his rules for civility that were based off of writings by the Jesuits that were written to help young men in both their interior and exterior actions. And it's kind of led to a bit of a conversation about civility on social media and what's going on there.
Yeah, that's right. I've come up with about three different things that are happening with our relationships based on the way that we interact on social media. And so I was just thinking about the way that those affect our civility, not just on social media, but in our face-to-face relationships. I consider them all real relationships. I think our relationships that we have on social media are real relationships, but we find ways to hide ourselves and only show what we want to show to other people. And so these three ideas, just real quick, the first one is that we have this expectation of immediacy. Like, I can reach out to anybody whenever I want to. And then I bring that into my real relationships, and somebody is either unavailable, whatever, physically, emotionally, whatever it is, but I expect them to be there right when I want them to be there.
And that's stressful. I know for me, this idea of immediacy, people call and you don't answer the first time, so they call multiple times and they send texts. Maybe there's a reason I didn't answer at the time. And so then I feel like I have to turn from what I'm doing to answer the beckoning of this other individual.
Yeah, that's right. And my second idea there, aside from this immediacy that we expect in our relationships, is that we create a persona and we hide our wounds. You know, even in, this is first and foremost our relationship with God, is that we grow this tendency to hide our wounds from the one who can heal us. And, while social media allows some people to just pour their wounds out there, and, sad posting, they'll call it, I guess, or something like that, and just kind of bear everything. But, we have the ability just to be who we want to be, and to show what we want to show. And that's all people will see. And that's all people will get to know. And then that finds its way into our relationships. And, and then when it comes to civil discourse, at least politically or religiously, we want to run to that safe space where we show only what we want to show. And people only get to know about us what we want to know.
Well, and also that we think we can say certain things that wouldn't be appropriate to say in real life. And, you know, there's sometimes that lack of prudence that can lead to some challenges, both for things we're willing to say that maybe we actually don't fully believe or we haven't really chewed on to articulate correctly, right? But because it's so quick to just post it right on social media, we lack that conversation, both interior dialogue and dialogue with others sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And the interior dialogue, when that goes, how do we expect to have a real dialogue with the people right in front of us when we're, you know, afraid of the quiet? And then all of a sudden, we might find that there are things we don't like about other people, so we might avoid them, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then what happens when we find things that we don't like about ourselves? Can we avoid ourselves? Well, we can distract ourselves, mm-hmm. and then we lose the ability to have that interior dialogue. And I think that's one of the scary things about what happens when we get so used to, you know, this is the third idea, is that, you know, we get so used to our little echo chambers on social media. You know, the interior dialogue doesn't happen. We just end up saying what we know other people want to hear. Mm. And that's how we're going to get our likes. That's how we're going to get our retweets. That's how we're going to get all that stuff. That's how we're going to win points. But then that's a real danger in real life. Yes, we need our places where we can go to feel comfortable, to receive consolation, to find that healing that I was saying that sometimes we hide from. But that doesn't mean that we need to run to those places just to get affirmation. And social media, that happens a lot. I've got these political views, I've got these religious views, my worldview, and I know the people who will like what I say when I say it, and that's the only thing I'm going to say. Right. But then we're not able to have real conversations sometimes on social media, and then that finds its way into our real life, and we only surround ourselves with the people who are going to agree with us, and we fight back against the people who disagree with us, or we just avoid them at all costs. And those are kind of the three dangers that I think of when we're looking at civility on social media discourse and the way that can really ruin our relationships or make them very difficult in our, you know, our face-to-face interactions with real people.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. This is Tim Ray Millington. You're listening to Trending. You know, one of the things you just mentioned, Father Tim, is how we can avoid, right, our own interior dialogue by looking for distractions in social media. And then also how we begin to look for that echo chamber of affirmation. You know, these can become real harms. And I think this is why we're seeing a lot of people jumping off of social media, because they recognize kind of some of the self-harm that we're actually doing in allowing ourselves to be distracted for long periods of time online. And then even just the fact that social media itself, even our text message notifications and the colors on our screens give this little release of dopamine, making us to receive a little bit of pleasure, to feel good about ourselves, to the point where we're constantly seeking affirmation just by receiving all of these notifications.
That's right. And I was hearing it. I don't know if you were talking about it with Chris a while back, the idea that it's not even the notifications themselves, the likes and the retweets that we're actually seeking. What we're actually seeking is the thrill of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're almost more turned on, you know, our dopamine centers and the excitement that comes is almost turned on just by the thrill of what will this post get for me, mm-hmm. rather than what it actually does get for us.
Right. We're getting a little bit of a chemical cocktail in our brains that we're becoming addicted to on a mm-hmm. small level, but it's still a small level of addiction.
Right.
You know, I know personally a couple of things that I've tried to do. I've removed most all notifications from my phone. So even if I'm doing something, my new text notifications won't pop up, partially because I'm a bird getting distracted, mm-hmm. but also because I don't want that any type of release or experience to come about from receiving a message. You know, the phone is there as a tool for communication, not to make me feel good. The person is maybe in some cases meant to help you feel good or communicate, but that's where the confusion settles in.
Right. And that's right. It's a tool for communication. And, you know, at times it kind of becomes our altar of worship. and for me, the most disconcerting part of it is the way that it will affect our face-to-face relationships. I'm not going to say real relationships, but our face-to-face relationships, which we can miss because we're focused on the screen in front of us. And we know this is a big issue. It comes up so often. But I think it just needs to be spoken more into it that, you know, this is going to affect our face-to-face relationships, the person God has put in front of us face-to-face. You know, sometimes God slides people into my DMs. I get it, you know, and sometimes ministry happens through, you know, through Twitter in the privacy of the DM. Okay, I get it. Those are real relationships. But if, you know, my my expectation of immediacy, if my, you know, hiding my wounds from the one who can heal me and my echo chambers, if I bring those into the relationship I have with my people in the parish, mm-hmm. you know, from my experience of preaching, then that's where social media becomes a real problem in how it affects our day-to-day lives.
Man, and social media can be such a reminder of humility and failure on my part, because, I mean, I'm sure you see this too, because you're very active as a priest on social media, that I can't always respond to everything. Right. Certain things shouldn't be responded to, but sometimes people can't understand that. And then sometimes I always let people know, I'll respond most of the time, but sometimes if the conversation fizzles out, it's fizzled out. But I also need a week or two sometimes to get back to you. And I remember I was getting ready to head out of town. I had all these messages, and I kind of had to pause and go, okay, Lord, I can't respond to these people right now. You've given me a specific task at hand, and I'm going to choose you and choose these people by praying for them and walking away for a bit.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea sometimes, to know which battles you can take on, and to know that we can't save everybody who comes into our timeline. You know, it's we've got to select
literal
sometimes.
Timeline.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We have to select the battles sometimes, and we have to select which people we can walk with, because we can't walk with everybody who wants our attention. That's a painful and humble thing. And just to know too when to point them to another direction, to another priest or whatever, to know that I'm not the Twitter priest, and how easy the temptation is to be like, oh, how many people are you counseling right now to my priest friends on the Twitter and everything like
on
that.
On the Twitter.
The Twitter, yes. The definite article is necessary.
Come on, you're a millennial. You shouldn't be saying the Twitter. However, I do say the YouTube sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I look at this too, and I mentioned this to you before the show. One of the things with online communication is that we've lost a sense of temperance in our conversation. And so finding ways to regain that. So it's nothing new that we're writing discourse over long periods of time and distances. And, you know, people historically, letter writing was fundamental to communication. But the difference between letter writing and social media is letter writing, you have the exhaustion of the arm after a certain point. You have to set aside time to intentionally speak to this person. And writing also makes you think more versus social media. It's so quick that we don't have the barriers of physically writing and setting aside that time in the way that letter writing did.
Yeah, I want to keep talking about that a little bit more too, about the impact that writing a letter has on the tiredness of the arm, but also that the words, all of a sudden, they're abiding in front of us and they become even more real to us.
The realness of personal communication. Wow. We'll come right back on that thought, talking more about people hopping off the social media, the Supreme Court. That is Father Tim Grumbach. Go and follow him during the break at Father Tim Grumbach. That's F-R Tim Grumbach.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Timmery here. Chris is out this week. Lots of prayers for him and the incredible ministry that he is doing. However, in studio, we have the joy of being with Father Tim Grumbach. Just before those messages there, we were talking about social media and the difference between social media and the temperance that's involved in letter writing. Because historically, people have always communicated over long distances to far-off friends that they didn't necessarily know as closely, or friends and family who are in different places of the world.
Yeah, and there's something different about the way that a letter abides, right? I like to use that word, is that when we write something down, especially you can look at the spiritual practice of journaling, is that when one is praying and their prayer is poured out on the page, there's something more tangible. It abides, and that we have to face it. You know, we can't run away from it and think like we do maybe with Snapchat or Twitter or something like that, that, you know, I see it and then it's gone. And it must be gone forever. And we know that's not true, but it's still in our minds that what we write down doesn't abide in the same way on social media that it does in letter writing. And I so often think about this beautiful story that my mom was telling me about. She would write letters back and forth with my older brother when he joined the army. And so he's this 17-year-old kid. You know, mom and dad had to sign the paperwork to send him off. You know, the world was very different back then. This was mid-90s. This was pre-9/11 and everything like that. And, you know, the greatest adventure he went on was, you know, driving across the bridge into Bosnia at the time and coming back. And And so he would be writing these letters back and forth with my mom. And that's one of the things I'm always going to remember about my mom. It's her sitting there in the afternoons on a, you know, warm summer day in Santa Monica area and just writing letters back and forth. And she kept all the letters that my brother wrote back, you know. And so my sister got a hold of these letters. And, you know, she's reading about Oktoberfest in Munich, winter in Korea, crossing the bridge into Bosnia, all these adventures that my older brother's going on. And she joined the army after that. You know, that was like one of the reasons,
wow.
You know, so the story is told, you know,
my sister joined the army
because she saw the stuff that my older brother was getting to do and the letters that were being written and the relationships that were forming, you know, more deeply between my mom and my brother through that. And mm-hmm. it led her on her own adventures. You know, she didn't get to go to, you know, Oktoberfest in Munich or to see Korea or anything like that. You know, where, as we say, I love my sister to death. But, you know, unfortunately for her, you know, my older brother, you know, falls into mud and comes out smelling like roses. And just in her life sometimes it's been like, you know, coming out smelling like mud. But I've never met anyone tougher than my sister because of that. And so... And I attribute a lot of that because, you know, she found these letters that were forming a deeper relationship and she wanted to be a part of that. And it's so beautiful the way that words written down on a page like that can abide in that way.
And how special they are to this day as well. Letter writing is something that I've been trying to adopt more so back into my life. Remember, I think a couple years ago, I decided during Lent to try and write letters to maybe one here and there throughout the week, especially people who I knew who were struggling in their vocation or the other side of the country and just going through a journey, especially at a time where millennials are so lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And so words of just joy in our lives. And I think, too, I noticed something in letter writing that we're... At least I am more willing to go deeper in terms of my spiritual conversation in letter writing than I would be, say, if I'm writing a social media post. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Grant, this is a lot of what I do every day, right? But the depth penetrates far deeper within a letter.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with that element of immediacy, is mm-hmm. that I can just send a tweet off and be done with it. But this letter requires a much bigger part of my heart
mm-hmm.
and, you know, more space to do it and more effort to do it. And all that expectation that comes with not knowing for sure if that letter is going to get to where it's going or how it's going to be received, that just the experience of writing a letter plays with our heart in a way that, you know, a tweet may not.
Well, and two, I was looking at the different rules for civility that President George Washington stood by that we talked about at the beginning of the show. For those just joining us, you can catch the podcast of this show with Father Tim Grumbach, who's here on radiotrending.com. But what I was thinking about in looking through these rules for civility, it talked about how if you're going to write a letter or read a book, you need to do that separately in private. You know, if there's not a conversation or a social environment taking place. And one of the moments it also talks about not reading what other people write. Mm-hmm. And made me think of two things. One, you know, you're always watching as people are looking over other individuals' shoulders as they're sending a personal text. I mean, done it before. I was just speaking at a youth camp and a couple of the girls were talking about how they were reading some of the boys' text messages and the girls just had me rolling. I'm going, you shouldn't be telling me this right now.
Yeah. It's a danger of curiosity too.
Right.
It takes a tremendous amount of self-discipline and death to oneself to be like, I'm really curious about this, but I'm just going to let that moment between those people reside between those people.
Right.
That's another part of like Twitter is we're constantly watching each other's conversations and we can break in at any moment we want to. And that freaks me out as an introvert. Like not just people breaking into my conversation. Like, that's cool. Great. They've come. I didn't have to go find them. But Twitter's made me even worse as an introvert. Like, I'm afraid to break into other people's online conversations.
Right.
Like, there's no consequence to that, but it's making me even more afraid. And maybe that's why I love letter writing, is there's a little bit more privacy that can happen there.
Right.
But then we also have to consider what happens when, you know, what we have to be face to face with what we've written down.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get rid of it? It's not as easy as deleting a tweet or letting Snapchat just kind of disappear for a moment like that.
Right.
You know, people used to have to like burn letters, right?
Right.
You know?
Or also recognize I'm not the person that I was when I wrote this, that documentation.
Right.
And the same thing with social media. You can delete your social media accounts, but there are ways to look back at the records and pull up things that had been written and published prior.
Yeah.
You know, talking about that, you know, in the different rules for civility, it talked about not reading other people's letters and how, again, with social media, there's that eavesdropping or watching, or I don't know how you'd call it, of other people's messaging. But also the fact that you just said it's open to everyone, there's a level of privacy that we see some people stepping out of because they're afraid to disrupt other people's conversations or to have what they're saying, even their thought process, disrupted. And I know I'm the same way. I remember seeing on Facebook years ago when it made it available so that you can see, say, two friends commenting on each other's Facebook wall, having a very intimate conversation of catching up and going, I could just comment on this break into this conversation. But also I would feel at times like I was invading by the fact that it popped up on my social media page, that you kind of needed to have the decency to look away for a second.
Right, right. And then that's when the trolls break in, right? and the trolls ruin our lives. We let them ruin our lives. And, you know, it takes, again, another huge amount of like self-discipline just to be like, I'm not going to respond to this person. You know, and there's almost a little bit of a satisfaction just to mute them. And so they're just like yelling into the great void that is Twitter and no one's responding to them. But maybe they need a response from us in love. But I think maybe our first instinct is this gut instinct of like, oh, I got to get them back. I got to prove that I'm right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show them their place. And then it just devolves into this thing that, you know, should not be.
Absolutely. It's definitely something to chew on, especially, you know, there's this exodus taking place from social media. Even some popular movie stars are doing this. You actually shared with me that, who is it from Star Wars, Kelly Marie Tran, left social media. Why was that, Father?
Because a large part of it was because the movie was, you know, not well liked in a lot of circles. And they found her character as a part of the problem.
She played Rose,
which a very large part of the movie revolved around, you know, bringing her into the story. And a lot of people thought that her part of the story was unnecessary, actually, to the story. And so they came after her on her social media and they just trolled the heck out of her. And it freaked her out, I would imagine. And as it would me, that's for sure. And though she would have had this awesome platform, you know, especially being an Asian American young woman who has just played a very important role in one of the hugest movies of the year, and she has this giant platform now just to be present and to show people, you know, the beauty of her culture and her ability to just speak out for whatever she needs to speak out for, and they came after her because they didn't like the movie, and then she decided it was time just to, you know, get rid of all of her social media so she wouldn't have to deal with all this trolling. And so the trolls took away her voice, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And there's such a balance. And Grant, I was not crazy with how the movie ended. Okay, if you've not seen Star Wars Last Jedi by now, it is the summer, so there are no spoiler alerts here, even though I just gave one. But the fact that at the end of the movie, there's this heroic moment. Finn is going to help save the day, in and basically like bomb and end part of what's happening in this battle that was going to be a huge victory. And Rose swoops in and saves him. Like, I get it. Anyone who's frustrated with how the movie ended, you were saying, you know, at what point can men have heroes that they can look to in movies?
That's right. Yeah. Well, I'd love to keep talking about that, especially some of the biggest movies that have come out over the last few years is who do we as men have to look up to?
Right.
As strong, virtuous heroes. Granted, I love the way that they show the humanity and the failure and the weakness. You know, that's who our God is, entering into the cross, the whole experience of the cross. Yet, who do we have to look up to but these weak men? And who are a lot of the characters in some of these biggest movies are weak men who are either power hungry or just plain weak. And I had never thought of it that way until you mentioned it. This scene where Rose saves Finn, she saves him, and as you mentioned, but she also takes away his opportunity for a heroic sacrifice,
sacrificial love for all, including her. Yeah. We're gonna come back talking more about movies. I just yelled, "Are you kidding me?" Really? I was so annoyed. I think I yelled that in the movie theater. I'm known for kind of talking a little loudly every now and again in movies. But man, coming back to this, if you're someone who wants to get off of social media, don't be afraid if you're not going to be able to communicate on Facebook or Instagram, or maybe you're downgrading to one social media platform. I think there's so much good that can be done both on social media and off. And the reality of turning to being more present to people, I think, is always a good thing.
Yeah, it's always a good thing. And, you know, I've always been warned, don't get rid of social media completely, but learn how to use it rightly. So right. I'm Father Tim. This is Timory. And we'll be right back here on Trending.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Chris is out this week. I am in studio with Father Tim Grumbach, and we're talking about social media. So, Father Tim, getting off social media, what are your thoughts? We've talked about the positives. Let's see your thoughts here.
I would love to do it. I would throw my phone away in an instant.
Flip phone?
If I could.
Flip phone? I'm all about the flip phone.
That's right. That would make my life so much more comfortable, I think, is just to be away from social media completely. Yet, that is how I live. I live a life of extremes at times, and it's not always the healthiest thing to be like, I'm just getting rid of everything because I'm having a little bit of trouble with it. I think that's a little too extreme. So I was really challenged on this by Sister Helena Burns. I don't know if you've come across her on Twitter before. She's one of the big Twitter nuns out there.
The theology of the body.
That's right. Sister. That's right. And so she's a part of the Daughters of St. Paul, and they have a bookstore that's really close to my parish, and so I get to see them a lot.
Does she live in L.A.?
She doesn't live in L.A., but she comes to visit every once in a while. And
she's the good kind of feminist nun.
Oh, that's right.
She was a hardcore feminist, and her ideas were really tried, especially even being in the convent. Mm-hmm. What she believed really had to come into conformity with sound teaching. Love her story. For anyone who wants to, I would really check out her work.
Yeah, she was here for the Religious Education Congress here in Anaheim for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. You know, it's the Religious Education Congress of Los Angeles of Anaheim. So
we could get started on that. That's a whole other conversation.
So yeah, we won't get too deep into that. But she was visiting, and I got a few minutes to chat with her. And it was during Lent, so I was off social media for Lent. And she said, "Oh no, don't do that." You know, don't do that. I'm like, why not? And she just made it very clear. It's like it's like that sense of like extreme. Like, I'm struggling a little bit with this, so just cut it out completely rather than trying to grow in virtue within it. Mm-hmm. And so that was a real challenge that she gave, was to grow within virtue within this place that can be a struggle, as far as just like the you know, being an introvert and the social aspect of it and feeling like having to always be present. That freaks me out. So my thought is that, as much as I want to get off of social media, and, you know, certainly periods of abstinence from social media, healthy.
Very good.
But to just throw it away and cast it away as evil, maybe not the best action, the best way to develop a healthy relationship with it. So, you know, with that challenge from Sister, it was just this thought that not just how am I going to get rid of it, but how am I going to use it in a healthy way in order to help build up relationships face to face as well as online. So getting off of social media completely, I don't recommend it, but I do wish I could do it, but I feel like I'd be running away.
And it depends on your state in life. And I think knowing yourself, if you're one who, man, maybe has an addictive personality, right, trying to limit it's one thing, but also knowing, you know what, I'm just going to hop off. I know I personally don't have the luxury of being able to step off of social media, and I don't think you really do either. There's a really fine balance. At the end of the day, all of our social media interactions need to be geared toward real life, in-person conversations and conversion in small ways or big ways.
Yeah, and always being aware of the way that our social media interactions affect our face-to-face relationships, but also what's left out of the conversation too is how we experience and encounter the gospel and how we experience and encounter God himself, who wants to have a face-to-face relationship with us.
Right. And you don't have to post every day. You don't have to post all day. You know I personally will hop on at a specific point and kind of project out tweets for the week and then hop on at a specific time to respond or interact. But scheduling that time, just like you would schedule anything else, right?
That's right. That's right.
Rather than absentmindedly picking up your phone and just going with it when, man, you have a million other things to do, or suddenly it's 2:00 in the morning and you're not going to sleep that night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. It can certainly take up a lot of time. I'm convinced that you know, when I get to purgatory, it's going to be just rereading all of the really unnecessary tweets. that I've read that aren't even my own, that the time that I've spent here wasting on social media rather than actually using it for good, for ministry, for evangelization, it's going to be just a lot of, you know, really the inane stuff that I've, you know, have wasted time with here.
Right. And I think there's a different level of social media that we didn't touch on, but we've talked about on Trending, in that role of comparison and jealousy and the impact of seeing other people on social media. You know, you don't have to follow everyone. The point of social media is to stay in contact, not to stalk others. And if, you know, feelings within yourself are stirred up following certain people, even if they're doing great things, maybe that's what you're jealous of. That's okay to pull away from that a little bit.
Yeah. And that's the couple of extremes that we can look at is, do I compare myself and be exactly like somebody else because they're getting the likes, the retweets, the attention, the followers? So if I just tweet exactly the way that they're tweeting, that's a danger in real life. Why is that not a danger on Twitter? But on the other hand is, I'm going to recreate myself. So people are only going to see what I want them to see and know what I want them to know, mm-hmm. which, you know, sometimes it's healthy. But if that bleeds into our regular life with the people we're face to face with, they're only going to see what we want them to see and know what we want to know. So it's about finding the healthy examples, the people that we can look up to, the role models on Twitter and in, you know, and entertainment as well, is where are we looking for role models and how are they shaping and forming us to be the men and the women that God has called us to be?
And it has been a full show. We haven't even touched on the Supreme Court nominee and what's to come down here. But I actually, in our last few minutes together, I'd rather talk a little bit about movies that we're consuming. Mm-hmm. You know, we touched briefly on Star Wars Last Jedi and how Rose swoops in and they try to make it seem like she saves the day by preventing Finn from really kind of actually saving the day. And, you know, you mentioned that opportunity of sacrificial love that Finn was about to show, and she took it away from him. And how, man, I'm just at the point, Father, where so many movies, the men are constantly degraded.
That's right. And that inability for Finn to actually, you know, perform this act of sacrifice out of love and for his, you know, for his friends, it goes right back into what we were talking about earlier. You know, the Ephesians 5, and the husband is called to sacrifice himself out of love for his bride and for his family, as Christ did on the cross. And how the woman's authority in the family is to call her husband to that act of sacrifice. And what we see in that moment, and again, I hadn't really thought of it this way until you had mentioned it, was that she was almost living out the opposite of that authority. Mm-hmm. Instead of allowing him to sacrifice and to win a victory through sacrifice, she took that opportunity away from him. You know, I'm certain that we could see it from another perspective, but that's a really interesting perspective that maybe a lot of people aren't talking about. And it allows us to look at other movies and the way that men are portrayed, and the women that are meant and called to call them out of themselves and into that sacrifice.
You gave me a strong level of accountability, because I have sworn off watching the new Incredibles movie, and maybe I'll change my mind. I loved the first Incredibles movie, but watching the previews and now hearing young men, especially teenage boys, about how frustrated they are about, you know, Mr. Incredible, you know, kind of just bumbling along, really not making anything happen. And Elastigirl is, you know, the one who's front and center the whole time without any plot spoilers. It was spoiled for me. That's fine. But I was so frustrated going, man, I'm just not going to watch it. I'm tired of this. But you had another perspective that I really appreciated.
Right. You know, from the hero perspective, yeah, he's not really the mover and shaker of the movie. But we get a perspective, without spoilers, into his family life and how he's trying to be a faithful father. And sometimes that means being up all night helping his son with his homework and taking care of the baby. And he just can't do it by himself. There's a message there. He can't do it by himself. And he learns this and he knows this and he recognizes that he may have superpowers. But in that sense, he's still just a man. And trying to be a faithful father. And to be a faithful father doesn't mean having it all figured out. And while, you know, we see this in The Incredibles 2, we see this element of, you know, who are the men that we have an opportunity to look up to in all kinds of movies, you know? Mm-hmm. My core team for youth ministry back at the parish thinks I hate Black Panther and Coco because I've seen these same things in these incredible movies.
Negative attitudes toward men.
Yeah, yeah. And I mentioned it before, you know, Bishop Barron has an awesome commentary about Star Wars, just what we were talking about. But for example, in Black Panther, it's, you know, the men are bumbling over power while the women are really running the show and making things happen.
And I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's true.
Yeah. And it may be true to life, but what does that give us to look up to as men? Do we grasp for the power like the villains? Because that seems to work out for them for the most part until the very end. As true to life as it may be, we as men, and I'm sure you women as well, need to be able to look up to somebody. Mm-hmm. And if we have no one to look up to, what are we going to strive for?
And helping people remember that we can't just sit back and receive a movie or content, that we have to sit here and chew on it, discuss it. And having these conversations draws more out of the meaning of the movie and what we learn. But also bringing back old movies, I think, is a great idea. Well, it has been a grand show. Thank you so much for joining me, Father Tim.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can find Father Tim Grumbach on social media, from Facebook, Instagram, to Twitter. I'll be tagging him so that you can get connected with him and his incredible ministry as a priest on social media.
Yeah, God bless you all.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.